right. Hello, everyone. This is Jason Robertson sitting here in Seattle in the waning weeks of cold winter. Spring is coming, and I'm really glad to get a chance to talk to Jonathan Chang in Beijing, where I'm sure it's also cold. Hey, John, good to see you again.
Hi, Jason. Actually, it's warming up a lot. It's going to be like 25 degrees Celsius today.
All right. Not that in Seattle yet. And by the way, of course, this is a Dialogues on Applied Channel Theory. Anyone listening to this podcast probably already knew that, but just to make that clear, what's going on here. And this episode is one that John did last year on his own, and I think it's really important, and I'm really thankful to John for initiating this kind of yearly thing we'll be doing, is on Qingmingjie, which is a holiday where you essentially want to remember your elders, remember your family members, and go to the graves of family members. And we're going to do this episode each year where we kind of remember Dr. Wang, especially take a pause for that. And, today we also want to talk about one of Dr. Wang's favorite quotes from the Neijing and how that was fundamental to his approach to acupuncture. But first, John, I wanted to ask you, say a few words about Qingmingjie, you know, what it is and what it's like there in Beijing and what you might be doing on that day yourself too.
So Qingmingjie is this year is on April 5th. And so usually we call it like the tomb sweeping festival. So a lot of people during this time, they will go to their, like around Beijing, there are a lot of cemeteries. And in those, like there, a lot of them are in like the mountains around surrounding Beijing. So a lot of people just go there. And then they will pay their respects to the elders, right? The people who have passed away, not necessarily elderly people. That could be, you know, sometimes sadly, you know, there's sometimes children who passed away too, right? So you would go to these the grave sites, and they would burn some incense, put some food in front of the tombstone. But there are also areas where you can like burn like paper money and different things like that for the people who have passed away. Since Dr. Wang passed away, we would every tomb sweeping festival, we would go to Dr. Wang's grave site, which is about around an 40 minutes north of Beijing, and the area is close to the Ming dynasty tombs. So around that region. So it's in this mountainous area. It's very beautiful. But because of COVID, you know, recently there are a lot of restrictions at that time to go there. But I think this year things should be back to normal. So we'll probably go. Sometimes we go as a group, like the students together with Dr. Wang's family. A few times I just went on my own with Mrs. Liu Yingai. Or once I went with Dr. Meng together, we just drove up there. So usually what we do when I would go there is like we would just light some incense, we would pay our respects to Dr. Wang, and maybe bring a bouquet of flowers and put it by his site and just kind of sit there for a bit and then just go back to Beijing. So, but for me, it's so peaceful there, like where he's buried. That's like, you know, you can, it's in this mountainous area, in this valley. You can sometimes just sitting there and just, it's very peaceful and it's nice to sit there and just meditate. And
well,
you've been
and the
there,
view,
right?
I mean, I don't think it's exactly the view you have on the Dialogues of Applied Channel Theory podcast kind of label that you see when you click on it.
Oh yeah, that is the view from Dr. Wang's tombstone.
On that label, right. That's the view, right? That's what it looks like. Mm-hmm. You're looking into the mountains. It's a beautiful spot, you know, and I've been there as well. Contemplation. You know, I don't know if you can quote this right away off the top of your head, but on Dr. Wang's tomb, you know, or on his grave, there is that quote. Do you have access to that, or should we?
I can't find it. Just one second. You can just continue talking.
Okay. Well, I mean, it was to me, the quote that Dr. Wang chose to put on his grave, you know, reflected fundamentally.
I don't think so. Dr. Wang did not choose that quote, right? It was Dr. Wang's family members. Decided to put that quote on his grave.
Okay. So the quote that is on Dr. Wang's grave, I guess, represented in a lot of ways then what his family members thought of, you know, what was important for Dr. Wang to leave behind. And fundamentally, on his gravestone, it describes, you know, the acupuncture channels, the importance of Chinese medicine, and also, I think importantly, that idea of the concept of the channels spreading to the four seas, the Sihai. So it, you know, spreading to all different countries beyond Beijing and to other people around China. And this idea that the concept of the channels, which is really important to him, is something that is not only, you know, a fundamental concept in East Asian medicine traditionally and in the past, but also the idea that was really, really at the heart of his mind, that the concept of the acupuncture channels represents future discoveries and the importance of the spaces, the importance of the crevices, the importance of fluid systems in the body, whatever we want to call the channels. This idea that he really dug through the classics to find is going to be something that a lot of modern medicine will benefit from. And so, you know, the act of studying Chinese medicine is not necessarily just trying to recreate the Han Dynasty, but it was really important to him in so many aspects of his work that the concept of the channels is a way to push all of medicine forward throughout the world. And I think that in a lot of ways, the phrases on his grave that were chosen by his family just bring that really, you know, into the shortest and most concise way to the mind of anyone who goes to visit his grave. And that really made a deep impression on me. I have a photo of his grave somewhere too, but it looks like you're almost there to it.
I think so. What it's basically referring to is that Dr. Wan spent over 50 years to help people with, you know, just using acupuncture and relieving disorders. And then at the same time, just like traveling, like spreading, like transmitting knowledge of channel theory, or what we call like Jing Luo Yi Xuan in Chinese, but I guess what we're translating as applied channel theory to all parts of the world. I think that's what it's saying.
Much more concise than the way I just put it. But this idea of the importance of channels and the importance of spreading this concept. And so something like today, where we pause here to really remember Dr. Wang, the person that kind of started this row of dominoes that we continue as we talk about this material and we work in our own clinics around the world. And I mean, for you and I, who are apprentices of Dr. Wang, there's this tension that always has to happen with as much as we can being true to the approach that Dr. Wang was teaching, to make sure that the fundamental concepts that he thought were important to the practice of acupuncture are transmitted to those we teach, while at the same time, you know, seeing patients and, you know, being forced to innovate in the modern era. That was also a very important part of him. And so, you know, I think for us as apprentices, one of the great struggles is often how do we remain true to the four, you know, the fundamental concepts of our teacher, while also not turning it into a dogmatic thing, you know, not turning it into something that's no longer alive, because he was very adamant that this is a living thing that has to grow over the time and the practitioners who take it. And this is a challenging thing for us as teachers of this material. And Jonathan and I were just talking about that before we began recording.
But I think you can see also, like, while we were studying with Dr. Wang, you could see how his understanding of applied channel theory was continually being refined, right? So, for example, in the past, we've talked about his location of the liver channel, right? And over time, how that shifted, right? Including the points, how we locate some of the points on the liver channel. So, like, you can see how a lot of his interpretations of or understanding of applied channel theory evolved over time, too. It's just what I would say is like a continual refinement. So I think if that's our goal, is to try to help in that process, I think that would be, it's a long, I think it takes time, right? Like you have to really first have a really good foundation, or like try to understand things first through Dr. Wang's perspective, right? Like how he understood things. And then once you have a good grasp handle of that, then you could start to, you know, I think that's when you start to develop a deeper understanding from your own experience, right? And then that's how these systems kind of evolve and change and develop over time.
That is exactly it. Yeah, like begin with, you know, the way that he was seeing the body, which in his mind, in his work, he felt like was at least a lot of what he was trying to describe and bring to us, as he loved to say, was like the way that these classical physicians were seeing the body in the era of these early acupuncture texts. And so he himself probably thought something similar to what you just said, that he was trying first to just figure out what the heck they were talking about in the classics. And he was always struggling with that and occasionally saying, I don't know what the heck they're talking about. And sometimes you'd ask him a question. I know you notice this. You'd ask him a question and he'd be like, I don't know. And then a year later, you would hear the answer kind of bubble out to something maybe we'd been asking him about, because he'd gone and thought about it. Or he'd seen a certain patient that made him think about it. So it's this tension, which I think in the modern era and in Chinese medicine, I've certainly encountered this and struggled this myself in a lot of ways, is that it is very tempting to go in beautiful theoretical directions that sound really good to students, to sound really good maybe to patients, But if they fundamentally aren't like getting clinical results, then maybe you've made something up. And so all of us as teachers have this, you know, this delicate dance we're doing between being, you know, true to the main ideas that are hopefully being filtered from the Neijing through Dr. Wang's mind, but passing those on to other students and then allowing other students to grow and making it so that they can take it into themselves. That's what we're working on. Mm-hmm. And it's an ongoing process, really, one we haven't perfected and maybe won't totally, but we'll keep working.
Yeah, I think that's one thing about that's special about Dr. Wang is that all the theories he would discuss and like teach his students was based first on like, it was all rooted, I would say, in the clinic, right? So it was based on like, he has an idea, then test on the clinic. If it was proven in the clinic, like countless times, like multiple times, like thousands of times, then you say, okay, this is probably true. And then he would start to teach his students. Whereas I think sometimes I think every practitioner has probably experienced this, like for example, you have this idea and then you test it out on one patient, it works, right? And then all of a sudden, because you're so excited about just what you had just observed, you really want to tell people and share, right? What happened? But then what happens oftentimes is then you try it again, like on other people. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And then that makes you try to think again, oh, why did it work in this instance? Why didn't it work in that instance? And then I think that's how things develop, right? But I think with Dr. Wang, he wasn't in a rush to like, you know, share everything, right? Until he could actually really test it out first in a clinical setting over thousands of patients.
Yeah, and you and I were fortunate enough to meet him after he'd already been doing this for, you know, 30 or 40 years. So yeah, he had the part of why he wasn't in a rush is he already had plenty to teach. You know, he already figured out a lot of stuff by seeing all those patients. So, you know, make sure we get the stuff he already had and no need to like constantly innovate too far beyond the fundamentals.
Right.
Which I think brings us to this. Yeah, go ahead.
So I think it's also his personality too, though. Like he was never in a rush, right? So I think he was always just calmly really taking his time, considering things, trying to really figure out kind of like a philosopher or a scientist, right? Like you really have to test it out and spend time doing that research on it before really like having confidence in talking about it. Kind of like, I guess you look at Darwin, how many decades did he spend researching the theory of evolution before actually publishing anything?
Yeah, that's true. And so I guess for all of us, this is an important day to remember that spirit of, you know, whenever you're tempted to go too far afield, to make sure that you go back to the basics at least and get those concepts down. And slow down and really try out the things that you're noticing, because of course new ideas will develop and new diseases arise and new insight. If we're all going to be palpating the channels in the human body, which is where it all starts, I think, then of course there's going to be new insights, but being willing to, or being patient to test those for a while and see, you know, which cases they work in and which don't. I think I'm just repeating what you said before passing that on to students is something that I struggle with and am trying to work on. But, you know, the other thing is after, you know, seeing patients now for, I'm entering probably this year, my 20th year of clinical practice. So the strange thing for me as a teacher is another side to this is, there's after 20 years of seeing patients, it is sometimes difficult to see where I begin and where Dr. Wang ends and where the two things blend together. Or I see myself, I watch my hands sometimes and I notice what I'm doing is exactly something Dr. Wang would have done. So you can almost see it. It's embodied in a way that is no longer even requiring thought. And so this is something I'm sure that apprentices of different teachers over many centuries have struggled with is this idea of embodying the teacher you had and trying to not blur where that person is in your spirit, you know, so to speak. It's hard to put this stuff in words.
No, I understand. I completely understand. Because I think when we palpate the channels, it always feels like also in the same time, like Dr. Wang's spirit is still there, like kind of helping, guiding you along, right? Like, I think that's what's kind of beautiful about this kind of practice, right? Like that physical palpitation.
Yeah. There's a time where I'm like, running my hand through the lung channel, and it somehow just reminds me of Dr. Wang. It's like all the memories of all these other patients or all these observations of him. And I guess in a way you could say it's like entering a river. And, you know, that's the interesting thing, of course, about the character Jing, which we translate as channel. It has all, you know, water is in the character, that this and the Neijing and Nanjing are these Jing. And, you know, those are also rivers. And so it's these rivers of ideas, and, you know, maintaining connection with the entire river of ideas without, like, shooting off into some crazy stream on the side and staying in the main river is another metaphor for what we're trying to do, I think. So one thing we, you know, want to make sure we try to get a chance to talk about today is, you know, a quote from the Neijing that was really important to Dr. Wang's understanding and incredibly informative to improving his clinical results, which is what often this is all about, remember. And, you know, what he would describe to us, to you and I, to anyone who is teaching, was often he would read something from the Neijing and be like, what the heck is it talking about? I don't know what it's talking about. And then maybe at some point in his life, he'd be like, all right, now I think I got it. And then he would practice another 5 years and be like, no, it wasn't that, it's this. And so he was always refining, as we've been saying, his understanding. And this particular quote was basically about, you know, what the channels are. In fact, well, the actual quote begins talking about jie, which is one of these characters from the Neijing that we translate as a point. This character jie is a really kind of unusual character to translate to English as a point. And if you look at the Shuowen Jiezi, the early evidence of this character, its original meaning was the nodes in a bamboo stalk. And so in the Neijing, there's different characters that we all translate sometimes to English as a point. But in this particular one, it uses this character jie, and it talks about the jie, which we could also translate maybe as joints or the intersections in the body, the points in the body. And you know, the Lingshu is basically saying, what are these jie? What are the points? And we will post this little short end of this quote, you know, on the Dialogues on Applied Channel Theory, you know, right at the, you know, part where you click on for this episode. So you can read, if you're readers of Chinese, you can look at the original quote. But I'm going to kind of paraphrase and get to the most important part that I want to talk about with Jonathan today and ask him about. One thing it says is the jie, the points, there's 365 of them in the body, and they're where the shen qi, the spirit qi, exits and enters. And that's one part about it. And, you know, first of all, you know what Dr. Wang would be saying about the shen qi idea, this, the points being where spirit qi exits and enters. How do you kind of talk about that?
I usually just, for this quote, I actually usually just go straight into the final part of that quote first. I first usually describe that part, like where, like when it talks about the different.
That's the giant punchline we're getting to.
Yeah. So usually I describe shen qi after.
So before.
Just to let that make
Okay,
sense.
You do it in reverse.
What do you do?
This is interesting, just to compare how we come at it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
One of the things, you know. Okay. So when we talk about this character Shun, which you translate to English as spirit, and Shun Qi, spirit Qi, you know, there's all kinds of different ways to translate a term like that, and it really depends on the context and the text it's in, and all these different meanings throughout history. But one thing Dr. Wang said that I think is really important is about Shun, is one way to look at Shun is that it's something we know is there, but is very difficult to perceive. And so if we talk about the points then, or the channels, as being places where Shun Qi is entering and exiting, then something is happening in the channel. Something is happening in these spaces, which we're gonna get to in a moment, that is difficult to perceive, but we know it's there. And one time when I asked Dr. Wang about this, he sat back, he's like, look, think about the incredible complexity of biochemistry, all the transformations that happen in the chemistry of the body to make us alive. You know, those things are happening essentially in fluid spaces in the body, in these empty spaces that are the points. And so when we say Shun Qi is entering and exiting at the points, one way to think of it is the channels then are where physiology is happening. So yeah, so is that kind of how you talk about Shun Qi though, when you come back to that idea?
Usually to be honest, when I talk about this quote, I usually just go skip just to the main part, like the main part at the end. And then I just describe like how Dr. Wang perceived what was moving in those different tissues. So that, I guess you could say that includes like the spirit qi, but it could also include like the blood and all these other like fluids that are flowing within those spaces, right? So I think like what we're saying, and they are really important for like all physiological processes to occur, right? Like physiologically occurs within these channel spaces or crevices that Dr. Wang described. So I think we have to talk about the last part. I think because we keep on alluding to it, I think we have to go straight into like the last part.
All right,
go
into it. All right, get to it. Get to the punchline. Talk about the punchline.
You can
talk about the most important part. No, you got it.
Okay.
I want you to do it now.
So basically what it says is that like, where does that where does the chi flow, right? The spirit chi, or you can say in general, I would sometimes just simplify and say where there's a chi and blood flow, like where do things flow within the body? And then it says like within the it says it does not flow in the, it does not belong to like the skin, vessels, muscles, sinews, and bones. I added vessels to it, but so basically it's saying like where do these things flow in? They're not in the tissue, they're in the spaces between all these different tissues in the body. So in the spaces between the skin, vessels, muscles, sinews, and bones. So that's a really important concept, like Jason's been referring to, is that like how Dr. Ahn perceived what the channels are, right? So and that's the most important thing, is that they are not like an actual physical structure, right? Because I think for throughout modern history, I think people have always tried to discover or see the channels as an actual anatomical, like physical structure, that if you use a scalpel, you can like cut it out of a cadaver and pull it up and say, oh, this tube-like thing is a channel, right? So I think that's why, you know, throughout history, people have said, oh, the modern history, right? It's like since Western anatomy became more prominent, like, oh, channels are the nerves, or they're like the part of the lymphatic system. Some people say like the channels are the blood vessels, right? Or the fascia. They're actually looking for an actual physical structure. But this quote here says, no, wait a second, the channels are not like these physical structures in the body. They're in the spaces between them. So that's where I think it gives us a very clear perspective of like where the channels are, is that they're in the spaces between these structures. But for the channels to exist, it requires the surrounding structures to create that kind of space, right? So if you don't have those surrounding structures, then there's no channel, right? You need these like different structures to create those walls or those crevices or canyons where these fluids or chi and blood can flow in.
You need the banks so the river can be there.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, and so if we even bring it into like everyday acupuncture, what, you know, this fascinating theoretical concept became real in every single needle that Dr. Wong inserted at some point in his life. For every point, his mission, his goal was to get the needle in the proper crevice, the proper empty space, the proper space between these structures. That became decades of his life work.
So I think like from Dr. Wong, I think like the way how he developed this concept, like what you're referring to, is that first he realized that when at a young age that you have to palpate for the location of points, right? Like you have to, in order to get proper Duqi sensation, that kind of traveling sensation, that you have to really feel for the location points. And I think that's when you start to be aware that, oh, they're like these very unique structures around each point, right? So each point is surrounded by these different, whether it's skin, vessel, muscle, sinew, bones, these different junctions, right? Where, for example, this is in a bone joint kind of junction, right? Or this is in between two muscles, or this point is in between a tendon and a muscle. So once you start feeling that, then I think over time you start to develop the idea that not only palpating these points can help with your diagnosis, but then later you realize that there's an actual crevice, like a channel space, right, that you can really palpate. And it's also located within these spaces. So also for not just for like point locations, also for one really important aspect of Dr. Ahn's system is like the channel examination, right? So like the palpation of the channels, we also palpate within these spaces too.
Which gets to a really important point I wanted to make sure was clear to listeners as well, is that, you know, applied channel theory, there's a lot of theory. We've talked about, you know, a lot of theoretical concepts about points on these recordings and a lot of other things. But in the end, it is of absolute crucial importance, at least in Dr. Wong's opinion, and that's what we're talking about in this podcast, is that you develop that personal skill to find the rivers of the channels. And what the last decades, especially of his life, were about was trying to teach other people, this is the river of where I found the stomach channel to be most effective. And this is the river where I found the liver channel to be most effective. And then, of course, as you're saying, the points within those rivers, within those crevices, within those pathways, each of those points then, as you're alluding to here, is found by noting what type of unique anatomical junctions are in the area where, like the point location books say, lung nine is. So, you know, you were pointing to lung nine. So, yeah, if you look at lung nine, you have a bony joint there, the wrist joint. You have the radial artery. You have a fold in the skin. Mm-hmm. So there's all these type of tissue junctions happening, and lung nine is that empty space that intersects as many as possible of these interesting bifurcations, these junctions, as you're calling them, or joints, okay, or jia. And so that then, for those of you listening, then you can see that point location then becomes an incredibly fascinating and incredibly endless journey for each of us as we practice. And there's and that's what I think he would love to say about certain points. Like points he used a lot were like really good friends, and he became much more effective at finding the junction for those. And other points, for those of us studying, we're still getting to know those points.
Right.
And so going back to the idea of feeling for these junctions gives freedom to any student to just get in your own hands and find them.
Yeah. So I remember when Dr. Warner would lecture about the jia, or like what we translate as, I guess, I got my translation from Li Mei, so as junctions. It's like Dr. Warner, during class, he would grab like an actual bamboo stick, like a bamboo, a part of one, and then he would like hold it in front of us and he'd point to the different junctions, right? So he'd be like, okay, here's like the different segments, right? Like this is one segment, and you can see the other, you know, like rectangular type or cylindrical type section, right? So there's different segments of the bamboo. What is it? Stalk? I don't know what it's properly called.
Yeah, but I think it is a stalk. Yeah, I don't. Yeah, it's a grass or some sort. Yeah.
So anyway, so like you know that where those two like segments connect, that's what he would say. That's the jia. That's the junction, right? So then if you like if you look at like some of the descriptions of jia and like these like classical these some of these dictionaries here, they say later on it meant it was used to describe not just those junctions between the different like within the bamboo stick itself, but also referring to different, for example, trees too. So where like branches would branch off the main trunk of a tree, that would also they would also call that a jia. And then later that I guess they also started referring that to also like joints, right? Like so where your two bones connect, those are also like jia. Like that's why we call it guan jia, right? Like the joints.
Yeah.
And then I guess later on we can, you know, Dr. Wan, I guess Chinese medicine or the way Dr. Wan interpreted is meaning that they also refer to within the channel spaces themselves, there are also like these different junctions where, like what you were mentioning, like some points it could be between where two muscles, there's a junction, or where a tendon attaches to a bone, like those are, that's another junction. So in those unique areas, that's where usually the points are located.
Which is maybe why the word junction is better than joint. I always use the word joint, but then I have to say, and there's skin joints, and there's vessel joints, and there's, you know, there's bony joints that we know of. So the English word joint is implying bony, but it's a broader term than that. It's these, yeah, junctions or places of intersection. And, you know, one of the metaphors I like to think about as well when talking about this idea of junctions and joints is, you know, when you talk to someone who's an oceanographer and they talk about life in the sea, and there's, you know, this interesting fact that there's a much greater biodiversity at places where the, you know, the land meets the water. Where two different types of things are coming together, that's where all the action is. You go deep, deep out into the sea, there's still life, but the biodiversity is smaller. The shanqi, the transformations, the movements are smaller. So these junctions where different tissue types meet in the body, if we think of the body as a landscape, is the place with great diversity and potential for transformation and change. And so that's another way to kind of come at it, I think, too.
I think just to go back to the originally, like when I think when Dr. Wang talked about the jing, like interpreting what the jing means, like jing luo, that jing, the what we call now is the like channels, but like jing, the way he described was like, because if you look at the classics when they talk about they describe this character, he would always talk about how the jing is referring, like if we look at a loom, like the traditional loom they use to make clothes with, right, or fabrics. So like the jing is referring to like warp. The silk. Like the silk threads are traveling more vertically, so like the straight lines, and then like the threads are going like traveling vertically, and the luo is referring to the lines, the threads that go horizontally. So like the jing, what it's referring
warp
is more
weft idea in English. It's right, right. We've heard that idea.
Okay, so like the jing are like, you know, the main channels, right? The main channels. So what where we get that idea of like the channels being like more like a river system, Dr. Wang would describe that refers more to why we call the jing the jing mai. So that character mai is really important to understanding that it's more like this kind of fluid or water vessel or system where things flow within it. So then Dr. Wong go into a big description of what the mai means. And if you break up that character, what it's describing is like also this kind of water flowing, right? Like if you look at mai, that character, it describes like water flowing.
We often translate as like a vessel, like a blood vessel.
So they add in that radical
not
to
just blood.
Yeah, to show that's on the and the body, right? There's like the flesh radical. So then once you put those two together, then we know that when they call it jing mai, it's like a channel in the body that travels, like it's a vessel in the body that I guess is a, like a river type system in the body where that travels more like, that's like the main system, river system in the body, like the channels. That's why we call jing mai and luo mai. Luo mai is more like the little collaterals, right? That branch off the main
And then
named
that
Channel
character
3.
Mai, of course, has led to centuries of debate about, oh, but well, then they use the character Mai, you've heard this, then oh, then the channels then are just the blood system. Because in modern Chinese, we use the word Mai when we talk about blood vessels. And Dr. Wang's opinion was, well, maybe not, that it's a separate kind of system. It's, of course, integrating within blood vessels, but it's a water system that's kind of beyond the vessels, too.
Right, because I think they would differentiate between Jing Mai and like Xue Mai, right? There's like the blood vessel, and then there's also these other, because there's so many vessels, like you're mentioning in the body, right? It's so there's another Mai is just like the Jing Mai, which is what we call is in between all these different spaces, right? In between the skin vessels, muscles, sinews, and bones. And then, but it's like a where Dr. Wang would say in modern anatomy, it's probably where the interstitial fluids flow, right?
Yes. And so then on this tomb sweeping day, we need to, I guess, just remind each other. And I love hearing how you teach it and how I think about it as well. It's like, this is a great opportunity. Dr. Wang would love to be in the room right now, adding his thoughts, disagreeing, agreeing, adding more thoughts, laughing about it, stopping for lunch. These kind of discussions were the things that were really the fruit of his life, was like having discussions about that, pulling out classical text. You know, and entering a debate. Yeah. I mean, there's not like there is not like, oh, this is the truth. It's, this is a debate. And in the end, we go back to the clinic and we try it out. And so maybe that's even we could go on like this forever. We could go on about the subject, about the spaces forever, because I think for those listening, I just want to make sure we all remember that that is fundamental to this entire approach to acupuncture, is this idea of actually needling into the spaces between things, looking for the space and palpating the spaces between things. And so if you guys have a chance, join us in a class where we work on palpating channels so you can see the rivers as Dr. Wang, or feel the rivers as Dr. Wang felt them. Anything else you want to add about, you know, Dr. Wang, maybe as we wind down this somewhat meandering but my like vessel like conversation?
I think like what I think is useful too is like if you live near a river system or like a creek or like a big river or by any kind of water system, just go for a walk on it once in a while and just observe, see what you know, just observe the surroundings and like that area and see what, just observe and pay attention to what you see. Because sometimes you'll see like along that river system or along that canal, or you'll see like different junction type areas that look like, in terms of Chinese medicine, we say, oh, that looks like a Husi point, or that looks like a Yuan source point.
Right.
That looks like a C cleft point. And then just be aware of that, because you can see, like, because, you know, these analogies, they do also can be refer back to what I guess the ancients were also observing in nature, right? So I think there's like a connection. But just observing nature can help us understand, you know, how the channels work in the body and the points too.
Well, I think that's an incredibly good way to finish. And maybe one last image will be my image of you. In a few weeks, sitting at Dr. Wang's grave, looking back down through the valleys and then contemplating the rivers in those valleys. And you know, through you, I hope you'll send some fine thoughts to Dr. Wang when you're there, from me too, please.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. I'll light some incense and bring a nice bouquet of flowers. I'll just let it burn. And then usually what I do is like, I just sit there and just kind of like watch it burn down and just look at the, you know, the surrounding mountains. It's very beautiful, very, very peaceful.
And then we go back and palpate patients.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, John, for taking the time to talk about this, talk about Dr. Wang here on Qingming.
Yes.
Oh, Qingming Jie. The character Jie is the same character,
yes.
Right?
Yeah,
so
right.
Jie are joints in time too, right? Holiday.
Yes, yes, yes. Very unique dates in the year, right? Where like things, I guess, are important to be remembered and celebrated.
Yeah, and being here with you, talking with you in this moment is a jia. It's a coming together.
Yes, yes.
And
yes.
So thanks for your time. All right. Yes. Well, until next time, John, have a good day there, good evening for me in Seattle, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Okay. Thanks, Jason. Nice chatting.